Okay, Dave, I have a real life situation, not a problem, but a question in my business that we are going to solve live in the episode today.
Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
Hello, welcome back to Rogue Startups. This is Craig Hewitt with Dave Rodenbaugh. Dave, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I'm all nervous because I never do the intro to the podcast, and I forgot to mention, this is episode 278. Thanks for joining us.
You hit it with the announcer voice and everything. Welcome to Rogue Startups, episode 278. Monday at the Denver Coliseum. Monster Truck Extravaganza. Yeah, no. After 8 years, man. I feel like, you know, we need to have more of this in our podcast life.
It's a work in progress. Yeah.
More work than progress, but yeah.
Yep. You know, I've been this is a bit of a tangent and not the main thing that I think we'll talk about today, but I have been stretching my limits as a creator recently. I've been writing a newsletter, like on my blog and an associated newsletter. I try very hard to do it every week, and I get about two out every month because I write a bunch and then I'm like, nope, terrible, throw it away. And it's hard. Like I feel for these folks who make a living as creators. Like, that's really emotionally challenging work, I think, because like you got to put yourself out there all the time. And I think that like we all kind of like hide behind the company and the brand of the company and the product and stuff like that. But if you're Justin Welsh or something, who's just like his entire living is him and his brand and his written content, basically. Like, that's a lot of pressure to like write really good words. Yeah. I mean, I'm just seeing like a very small glimpse of it. It's not a small feat.
I would go so far as to say it's fucking brutal, man, because I remember when I was doing a blog back in 2011, 2012, and I tried to keep up a very regular schedule just to put out content on a weekly basis. And I could do it for a little while, you know, I was churning through all of my good ideas, but then content started to run a little bit thin and I was like, oh shit, what am I going to do now? And there was this beating myself up because I couldn't get it together and couldn't get out something, or I would write something and I'd be like, oh, this sucks, this is terrible. And then I left a bunch of draft posts when I finally abandoned my blog years and years ago, and I was like, all right, I'm just done with this. And even now, like writing, you know, long form content articles, there is very much this, I'll call it the graph of writing, where it kind of looks like a sine wave. And, you know, for those of you that are not familiar with your mathematical stuff here in sine waves, you go up the curve and then you come down the curve into a deep trough and then back up to sort of the beginning again. And, you know, I think our audience is probably nerdy enough for that. So that was a little bit of mansplaining today on Rogue Startups. That was awesome. All right, cool. Anyway, the cycle of writing for me is very much the enthusiasm. Oh, I've got this great idea. Oh, cool. I'm just going to dive right in. I'm going to make the outline. And I make the outline and I'm like, all right, let's go. And I get super excited until I get about a third of the way through it. And I'm like, fuck, now I'm just in a slog. And then it just gets worse.
It doesn't make any sense with what I wanted to do originally or the first three paragraphs I just wrote. Like, how do I tie these things together? Yeah, it's...
Right. There's 100 things that could go wrong. Those are two great examples. Oh, this thing doesn't fucking make sense. Oh, this outline is really two separate topics. And I didn't know that until I started writing these things here. Or I tried to go source some stuff and I'm like, I can't find the stuff I wanted.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, that's all that stuff. So then you hit the bottom, right? You get the, like, if you're lucky, if you are absolutely lucky, you get to the bottom of that trough and the article is done. But a lot of the time you just give up and you're like, fuck it, I'm done. I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. But if you make it, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you make it to the bottom and you finished it, then from there it gets better. Like, then there's the, okay, walk away from it, stop thinking about it for at least 24 hours. And then I come back and I'm like, all right, this is more salvageable than I thought. These things are kind of incoherent, but let's, now I know how to tie them together because I've had some distance from it. And yeah. then I can kind of edit it, make it make sense, go through it. And, you know, having that third party perspective on it helps a lot. And it's the yeah. same thing that I talk to my kids when they're doing their high school papers or their college papers. You know, they'll send me the draft and I'll be like, okay, here's the process. Like, I'm going to go through, I'm going to tear this stuff apart. I'm not going to be, you know, I'm going to be kind of brutal about it because you are too close to the work to see all the stuff where it's not pulling together. So they know that my first round of comments are going to be pretty hard. And then after that, it's just refinement. Like, okay, now you've fixed all the major problems with it. Let's just fix all the nitpicky stuff. And then you're probably good. And, you know, knowing how to go through that editing process is really valuable, but it's also very tough. Just to even make it to the end is a huge victory. If you can get to the end of a written piece and not hate yourself and not, well, okay, just get to the end of the written piece and complete it. You can still hate yourself a little bit because I think that still happens. But, you know, if you can do that much, like, that is already a major victory right there. Just give yourself a break. Go celebrate with an ice cream or a cocktail or, you know, a kombucha, whatever you like to have to celebrate, and then go back and fix it later because you just need a break from it. Yeah.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. I mean, yeah. it's just challenging. It's the single biggest challenge for us as a business is all of our customers go through this every week with their podcast
episodes. Oh God.
Yeah. It's super challenging, but, kudos to everyone who is a creator who ships stuff on a regular basis, and bonus points if you feel good about yourself in the process. you're a better person than me most of the time. But I think this is the easiest format to do it, Dave, right? We get on, we talk, and it just is content. And it's just, I think it's why podcasting is so easy and so good for a lot of people. It's just, it's easier than writing. It's easier than video. And it's great content, and it's a really good way to relay a message that we want to share. So I've drank the Kool-Aid. I'm sharing it with everyone today, but yeah. Okay, Dave, here's the situation. We have been using HubSpot as our CRM for about 2 years. It is a fantastic piece of software. it is super powerful and really robust. And does a ton of stuff. I can see, okay, so we use their sales professional and their marketing professional because you need both to really get a comprehensive view of the customer and do things like automations and stuff like that after the fact, right? It costs about $850 right now we're in the second year of the startup discount. At the end of this, it will be about $1,500 a month.
Ugh. Ow.
Shitting my pants, I said, well, that's not okay.
Yeah.
What else are we going to do? So I looked at Pipedrive and Close, right? Both very good pieces of software, have experience with both of them in the past. All in, I think either of them would be about $150 a month for what I use HubSpot for, a comparable set of functionality. Maybe a little bit of like, hey, we got to add a little SavvyCal and we got to add a little bit of like, sign well, right? For electronic signature, maybe not, right? It might not be true apples to apples across the board, but like suffice it to say, like I can continue selling stuff with either of those tools. The problem is, like any good digital marketing or sales tool, HubSpot is incredibly intertwined in a ton of shit we do, right? It has like CTA forms and opt-ins all over our website. It is how we collect like electronic signatures for new deals. It is like the lead nurturing campaigns for when someone opts into like a sales thing on the site, like how they get nurtured until they book a call. It is most of my like non-personal like booking calendar things. They have a Calendly kind of thing. It's all of our revenue reporting, like sales revenue reporting. And there's just a ton of fucking history there, right? There's years of deals and leads and all this kind of stuff. And so the question is, maybe we talk through, how do you decide, okay, we're going to move and we're going to save, you know, right now, you know, say $600 a month. But over time, you know, probably like $1,000 a month to incur the cost of, I'll say, if all I did for 3 days was move us over, I think I could get it done. But I definitely don't have three empty days, right? Unless I just did it over a weekend, which would be terrible. So three of my days to do this. There are certainly services that can move over a lot of the data, right? That's like the easy part. And it costs about $1,500, it looks like, to move our data over. But the big one is like all of the shit on the website that I have to update. And there's no automated way to do that I can see, because it's not a one-to-one swap out. So this is my question. Do you stick with it and say we're fucking married for better or worse? Or do you say bite the bullet and you'll be happy you did in the end?
Well, you kind of answered part of my question, but I'll just sort of go over this here because I think it's an important thing to evaluate. So knowing what I know about HubSpot, so, you know, our mutual friend Charles Pileski also uses this. And I know that he's got this like deeply embedded to all aspects of his business. So, you know, he's got the website piece of it and he's got the email marketing piece of it and he's got the CTAs and the form collections and all of those things that you just talked about as well, and the sales pipeline and things like that. So HubSpot is really taking the place of like five different tools here. Is that fair to say? Because like, it's not just Pipedrive that you're going to have to throw at this thing. You're going to have to get Pipedrive. You're going to have to get SavvyCal. You're going to have to get something to handle the website, whatever the hell that is, Ghost or Static or you know, WordPress or something, whatever. And then you're going to have to add in a new email marketing tool, whether that's, you know, ActiveCampaign or Infusionsoft or Drip or something like that. And then you've also got Pipedrive in there to do your sales, but then you've got to also maybe do something to do your revenue tracking and maybe something different to do your forms. Is that a fair assessment?
Partially, yeah. Yep, the forms, definitely, right? But we already have something in place on the website. So the website has been and will always be on WordPress. So we don't use the website functionality of HubSpot at all. Forms is a bit of a mixed bag right now. We have some lead forms that come through Gravity Forms, and some that come directly from like embedded HubSpot forms. I have a SavvyCal accounts anyhow, so like we could use part of that. But Pipedrive would have that instead. The interesting one that you brought up that I am quite definitely not ready to make the move on, and maybe this is part of the calculus as I should, is we still use Drip for all of our marketing automation stuff. So like, newsletters, right, to customers and non-customers, all of our nurture sequences, all of our onboarding and customer lifestyle stuff all lives in Drip right now. If we're paying for HubSpot, we could do all of that with HubSpot. It would probably increase our bill at HubSpot because of the number of people, like subscribers, we have. But yeah, that's another variable.
Okay. All right. So your level of integration with HubSpot isn't quite the same as Charles's, as I understand it. So,
yeah.
Okay. So if you were to blow up HubSpot here, it sounds like you already have
mostly
a lot of
sales.
Those. Yeah. So it really is just your sales tracking tool right now, and maybe modulo some forms, which you could knock out with Gravity Forms if you had to.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, the question really is like almost keep HubSpot and then go all in, because that could make some good sense, or blow it up and just replace it with Pipedrive or close.
Yeah, well, I can tell you right now, that is not 3 days of fucking work at all. If you're going to like migrate all of that shit over to HubSpot, no way. If you're just going to rip out HubSpot and replace it with Pipedrive and maybe some Gravity Form stuff, yeah, I could conceivably, you know, I'd conservatively say 5 days to a week. But sure, I mean, that's not terrible for saving a net of, so, you know, I'll just do rough numbers because it makes it a little bit easier to do the math. So you're paying $8 for HubSpot right now, and you would get Pipedrive for, we'll round up and call it $2. So the difference is about $6. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's saving you $7,200 a year. And that's only going to go up when HubSpot's discount pricing goes down. So that's going to be an additional $2,400. So you'll save, you know, later $10,000 a year being off of HubSpot. I mean, if you were more deeply integrated into HubSpot, I would probably say go all in and stay with HubSpot, because, you know, there's a lot of good stuff that comes out of HubSpot. I've seen the dashboards, I've seen the tooling, I've seen the lead generation tracking stuff. And, you know, like if you're doing everything on there, it's pretty goddamn powerful. And I can totally see why you would actually want to centralize all of that stuff, even if it's not 100% perfect, because it adds a lot of value to know, hey, my website does this and that feeds into my email tracking, and I can do my attribution across those two things here evenly and find out how my sales leads are tracking across the forms. And like all of that turns into a really beautiful, well-run system, even if your website may not look like a beautiful designed 2023 website with the fancy graphics and all that stuff, right? But I'm not hearing that that's where you're at right now. It just sounds like, hey, we're doing lead tracking on it and maybe a few forms. And if that's all you're doing, going the other direction back to Pipedrive seems to make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think just to give context to that point, the second choice I had for this was, and this is because truth be told, I had not even considered moving all of our shit from Drip into HubSpot until this conversation. But the other option I had was to use ActiveCampaign for both, right? So just like you would go all in on HubSpot, you could go all in on ActiveCampaign. And it has a CRM. It's not nearly as powerful as even Pipedrive, but it could do all the marketing automation, campaigns, newsletters, blah, blah, blah. And then that talks just seamlessly to the sales side of things. Yeah, I mean, I think that I think you can make those two talk. You can make disparate systems. Like right now we use like Zapier and some other stuff to have Drip and HubSpot connect and sync data. So it's not impossible to think we couldn't do the same with a different system. It's always just the like, oh, fucking Zapier blows up one day and we have a bunch of stuff sitting there like failing and we don't even know it maybe. But yeah, I mean, I think that as a side note, like the intentionality and kind of future proofing of this is not trivial. Like for those of you making these decisions right now, the thing I would say is like try to go all in on a tool. If you can, because you won't have to make this decision later, because it's costing me a bunch of time and mental energy and is super unproductive. And I would much rather do a lot of other stuff with my time. But it's not a trivial amount of money. And I don't see Pipedrive or HubSpot, I'm sorry. And I don't see HubSpot ever getting cheaper. So I think that like you're saying, the cost savings will only increase over time if we make this move.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, in the same vein of what you're talking about of reevaluating stuff, I have, you know, since Rob and Derek have left Drip, I've been mostly just sort of hanging with Drip because I had already set everything up on Drip. Yep. And that was it. Like, that's the main reason. I'm like, there wasn't a whole lot of motivation to undo that, because when I tied it all together, it just worked and it was good enough. And I'm like, fine, I'll just leave it alone. But now I'm sitting here looking at my bill and I'm also looking at alternatives and I'm looking at the complexity that I have to do in order to make automations work in Drip these days. And I'm looking at the level of innovation that happens in Drip these days as well, which, by the way, the answer is zero. All they've done is they fucked around with the interface. They went in on e-commerce and then they just keep bolting shit onto the interface right now. So there's my little Drip rant for the day. And, you know, I'm tired of it. Like it isn't working substantially better than it did 4 to 5 years ago. And, I'm done with it. So I'm actually looking to move to Bento and I'm not going to save anywhere near what you're going to save with Pipedrive to HubSpot. But it's enough for me to go, oh, that's good, because we also made some changes on AWS that bumped up our costs over there. So I can sort of balance the two of those and keep our net spend about the same on our infrastructure stuff. And I think I'll get a net better experience out of it, because I'm looking at Bento with Jesse Hanley and like he's all over it, man. He is absolutely fantastic. Very customer centric, very, you know, responsive to things. I mean, he very much has the same spirit that Derek and Rob did when they built the original Drip. And so, you know, in my opinion, I think Bento is going to be the next Drip. So, you know, I'm ready to totally make a bet and go all in on Jesse right now, because I feel like it's about a year ago, it wasn't quite there. Now, today, from what I've seen, like, it's not only there, but it's actually actively better than drip as well. So I see that this is going to be a net win, because I wanted to add some more automations and kind of, we have stuff that's in intercom, we have stuff that's in drip. I'm not happy with it being split across that. It's just kind of the way it evolved. And now that I'm looking at the onboarding and stuff like that, I really want to centralize it and make the triggers more uniform. But I can't do that across three systems, so I'm going to have to standardize on one. And I'm like, all right, Bento seems like the one that I can do, because if there's not an integration there, I feel like Jesse's willing to build it. But I'm using all standard stuff that Jesse already supports. I'm like, fuck it, we're going in on Bento. So,
and it's a relatively like e-commerce specific tool, or is it a kind of SaaS universal kind of tool?
Much more SaaS oriented. Like, I was having a conversation with Jesse the other day, and you know, he's kind of looking at the market of drip SaaS customers who have like me feeling kind of abandoned now, right? Because they're all trying to go this direction of e-commerce and drip, which is funny, because if I talk to other merchants and I'm like, so who are you looking at, or who are you thinking about, or who are you switching to? Drip never enters that conversation. So I have no idea who it is they're selling to. They must be selling to like the very, very, very large brands, because the mid and small size brands aren't touching them. They're not even thinking about them. They're not even in the conversation. So I have no idea how Drip considers themselves this e-commerce tool. It's very bizarre.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, all of us SaaS folks that are on Drip right now are kind of feeling like, okay, we're just second class citizens. They don't care about us. I'll move and go somewhere where they do care. Jesse cares. Like, he's totally ready to capture that market right now. And I'm ready to go all in on Jesse. Yeah.
That's awesome. I think that the two other names I hear a lot in the SaaS space are Customer.io and UserList, right? So our friends at UserList. And I think that Those are kind of different companies in terms of like their life cycle and stage and stuff like that. But I think both also approaching this like SaaS email CRM type world in a kind of similar way. So yeah, that's awesome that they're good alternatives to these tools. But it's painful, man. I think that's the thing that just, it kills me, right? It's just like, this is such a bad use of my time. You know, and it's such a bad use of your time, but it's not like hands down the worst use of my time, because like fucking there's nothing more important than sales, right? Like selling shit is revenue. Like it's a straight line. You know, I think you can argue like, oh, is my 18 point nurture sequence with 37 different customer signals, like, is that any different than like just sending three emails 2 days apart? Like, I don't know. You know, like I think that's arguable, but like, is collecting leads and getting people on the phone and closing deals like absolutely optimized? Like that's super important, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
If you're in that kind of like business. So,
right. But I mean, we're single founder companies, and who the hell else is going to think about this except us? Like, right? It doesn't, you know, the marketing department, quote unquote, you know, you're always going to be doling out some marketing activities and say, all right, here, you're focusing on this. You're going to do lead gen, or you're going to do this kind of social media promotion, or you're doing this kind of email stuff. But they're not thinking about the tooling. They're not thinking about how it all connects together necessarily. I mean, that's a much higher level position. So, you know, I don't know who, I certainly don't have anybody else to think about it. I agree that I feel like of all the things that I could be working on right now, this is not the best strategy level thing, but I have no choice to other than to deal with this myself. And you know, my costs with Drip are just going to continue to go up. In fact, I know that there's an impending price increase on my account coming. So this is definitely something that's going to save me that cost over the year, which I'm already spending on other infrastructure. So, you know, just trying to stay lean and mean going into the whole recession thing here. Did you see that thread from Patrick Campbell about, he was talking about profit well and how to prepare your company for the impending recession and stuff like that?
No.
All right. So if you're not following Patrick on Twitter, he's at Paticus, and I highly recommend that you do that, because he's got very interesting nuggets of SaaS pricing wisdom and data about our particular economy. But this thread that he was going over here was talking about, you know, how do you want to think about your business during a recession? And so, you know, he first talks about making sure that you get lean. So like go through your expenses with a fine tooth comb. And, you know, then he's like having sort of this imaginary conversation with himself. And he's like, but Patrick, I'm totally lean right now. And he's like, no, you're not. You've been spending like a drunken sailor for the past 2 years. Cut, cut, mm-hmm. cut. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, you're not wrong on that one. So, you know, that was one of the suggestions. But the other one that he was talking about was specifically make sure that you are optimizing for retention. And he had some very good suggestions in there about, you know, make sure that your onboarding is really targeting the customers and showing great value. And now is a great time. And, you know, this was kind of one of the controversial things about the thread saying, now is a great time to acquire customers as cheaply as possible. So if that means offering substantial discounts or even using a freemium strategy to pick up customers that feel like other things are too expensive, if you get them now, then later you can convert them to paid or raise the prices on them when times get better. So you basically are growing your revenue that way in sort of a long-term thinking kind of way. Anyway, it was very interesting, but you know, it was definitely one of those things that I was thinking about, like, all right, well, what are the strategies that we can use right now to try to capture other customers that are kind of thinking about that the same way? It doesn't really matter whether we are in a recession or not. The problem is that a lot of our customers kind of think that we are. And so you have to, you have to adjust your behavior accordingly. That was sort of the bottom line of Patrick's thread right there, which I think is a great bit of advice to take right this time. Anyway, so.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that the point about expenses, like, yeah, we all come off of a, you know, zero interest rate, economy's growing kind of mode. Like, but this is not new, right? Like, I mean, we have seen this on the writing on the wall for the last 6 or 10 months, right? So hopefully folks have been kind of keen on this already. I don't know. Do we even want to get into talking about SVB and like the entire disaster that this could be like really easily? I don't think we want to. I don't think we want to get into that because I don't want to be like a bear about this. But I have some serious, I'll just say concerns. Like I'm aware that I'm concerned about that this is a much bigger thing than just one bank. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's. Yeah, I'll hold off on my further pontifications about the economy from here. But yeah, Patrick Campbell, super smart dude. Anything about pricing and like SaaS financials, I would listen to him over most other folks. So yeah, I agree. Follow him. I'm not huge on Twitter these days, but definitely follow him there because he's a smart dude. And he has access to an enormous amount of data and they do a lot of really cool like internal data reporting stuff now. Even before they joined Paddle, they did. So super cool.
Right. Yeah. I follow them for two reasons. One, he's got SaaS benchmarks and he also has subscription benchmarks. So it's more of an e-commerce-y kind of thing. So I kind of get to see two sides of the economy that I participate in, which is pretty cool. And he does have a pretty amazing data set in there. And he talks about like SaaS companies at all different levels of ARPU, all different levels of churn. You know, how long did you take to get to these levels here? So, you know, you very much can compare yourself and see how am I doing relative to all other people that are in my cohort, you know, either in age or revenue or churn or whatever. So,
yeah,
it's pretty cool stuff.
So, you know, Dave, where I'm kind of taking this is this conversation around tooling is, you know, probably worth making a move just for the savings but. should go all in on one tool because it's a better kind of data user experience, user being me, right? Like my user experience and that experience we can give customers probably is better with all of our disparate tools talking to each other or being in one place. So yeah, but I mean, I think that the price difference just between anything else and HubSpot is to where it makes it worth moving away. Undecided, but that's kind of where I'm leaning. So thank you for talking through that with me. And sorry for monopolizing our time today. I'd love to hear how things are going in your world and with Recapture.
Yeah, sure. And it was not a problem. That was a fun discussion. But yeah, so Recapture, it's interesting. Probably about a week and a half ago, I was going through a bunch of analytics reports because, you know, I embarrassing admission, I have not done anything about GA4 yet. And now I'm looking at the calendar going, oh, fuck, that's gonna end here pretty soon. Maybe I had to think about it. Maybe I should do something. I still haven't done anything about it, by the way. Been weeks still. But, you know, while I was thinking about that, I did start digging into my analytics and I was looking at stuff. And, you know, I came across a couple of really interesting things. So interesting thing number one was we had a majority of users that are mobile based that are using the app now. And I don't know exactly when we crossed that threshold. I know that a few years ago we hadn't crossed that threshold, but now we're at like 60-40, 60% mobile, 40% desktop, and they're using the app. And so of course I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I went and I pulled up our app on my iPhone. Oh my God. It does not work well. I mean, I started looking at the top three URLs that they visit, and all of them are subpar experiences. So, I mean, to any Recapture customers that are out there listening, oh my God, I am so sorry. And we are now looking at that right now. Like it's funny. I've been telling our QA engineer for the past year, hey, focus on desktop, because that's where everybody does all their setup. That's where they do all their configuration. That's where they spend most of their time. Don't worry about the mobile. Just ignore this. It's not a good experience on mobile. Don't worry about it. Now I'm here finding they're spending the majority of time on mobile. I'm like, God damn it. So now that's we got to do something about that. Oh, it's very interesting. And so now, you know, we're trying to figure out like, what's the extent of the damage? Where do we focus our efforts? Where are we, you know, what do we work on first? How bad is it? What do we need to fix? Like, we're still just wrapping our heads around all of that stuff. And I'm embarrassed to say that, you know, as the product owner here, I should have been more on top of that, but I wasn't. So, and you know, as part of that, I'm also trying to think about, you know, well, all right. So in addition to that, what about our onboarding experience? Because now that I discovered this thing about mobile, we started having these discussions internally. And then I was asking myself, well, is this why we see same day uninstalls? Like, do they try this thing out on mobile, go, this thing's a piece of shit, and I'm out of here? So we started tracking some stuff on our own dashboards to find out who's doing what on what kind of device, what browser, what platform, desktop, mobile, what operating system, and so on and so forth. So, I don't have enough data yet to make any conclusions, but so far I was a little bit surprised that I haven't really seen any mobile users come in here and try to set things up on mobile. So that's kind of thrown my theory out the window. And it makes me think that maybe what we see is they configure things on desktop and then they just monitor things on mobile, which kind of fits the narrative of the URLs they visit too. But it's also possible that the URLs that they tried to visit otherwise are all shit and they're so broken that they can't do anything. So they just stop visiting them. They try it once and then they just go to the stuff that sort of works. And I don't know. It's a whole shit show. We're trying to untangle it now. But as part of that, I'm also looking at trying to figure out, all right, if I went in on this, do I want to go for GA4? Or do I want to do something else? And I already integrated Fathom in, and Fathom is nice and it's simple. It's easy to read. It's easy to use. But I feel like it's definitely missing some of the power of universal analytics that I get from Google now. And I'm like, do I really want to go all of GA4? I mean, I'm probably going to end up doing GA4. It's just a question of how deep you go, because apparently you have to configure fucking everything. And I haven't done it yet. And I know you have. And I'm sure you can offer me some sob stories / wisdom here. But the thing that we're looking at right now this week is we had Mixpanel originally. And then sometime in 2021, it got disabled or shut off or ripped out or I don't know. But the data's long gone and the account is empty. And I'm looking at this going, all right, I could track this thing all the way through the funnel in a way that's more meaningful. And I feel like I'm ready to do that now. So I'm thinking I may just go in on Mixpanel and eschew GA4 for the moment and maybe do it later. I don't fucking know. Anyway, that's kind of where we're sitting at right now. So it's onboarding hassles, this whole mobile user experience thing, and trying to wrap our heads around that. Plus I'm still trying to hire. So, you know, good times all around.
Good times. And the thing I'll say about about GA4 is, yeah, like super easy to set it up, and then it gets complicated, right? Like just to install the snippet or connect it to your Universal Analytics is super easy. And then it's like all of the forms and all of the events on the site need to be configured. Once that happens, I actually quite like it because, yeah, it works. We use Amplitude, which is similar to Mixpanel, and it looks and feels a lot like that. So I am quite hopeful, actually, that we'll get like really consistent like behavioral and activity metrics across like the marketing site and into the app for people. You know, the difference between like Amplitude can then like put it down to a user, right? Because then we sync like Stripe information to Amplitude, right? So we know like this person did this thing, not just a person or people did this thing, which is where GA4 even still kind of quits. So yeah, man, I mean, we worked with someone to help us kind of fine tune our GA4 stuff because we're running AdWords, right? And AdWords is going to have to talk to GA4 in the future. And like, if your shit is not tuned up, you're going to be running, you know, ads to bad conversion events and stuff. And so we paid somebody a little bit to help us with that. And it was pretty enlightening. But yeah, man, I feel you on the mobile stuff. And in a similar kind of vein, something we learned is like, we were running ads to people on mobile and desktop, and the conversions on mobile were horrendous. And so we turned them off. And so that's just like a lesson is like, yeah, I think you're spot on that. Like you optimize the site for like the initial sign up, right? And then just know that like they're going to finish it another time, like for the most part, especially in like a B to prosumer, B2B kind of setting, right? Like nobody's going to go on their phone and sign up for, you know, whatever kind of business tool and actually start using it there. I think that it's so hard to make that user experience good and people get value out of a tool on a device, on a mobile device. So tough one.
Yeah. It's tough. It's hard. It's absolutely hard to, you know, and we've looked at other pages and trying to do things like our email editor in a mobile phone. Like there's no way.
Yeah, I know.
There's no way. So, you know, we're trying to look to other apps like Shopify has a mobile app where you can literally manage the entire store from your phone, which sounds kind of crazy, but they've actually done a fairly decent job at that. And so I feel like there are probably some experiences to borrow. They definitely give you a downgraded experience, but you can still access most of things. So after we fix the major broken stuff, the obvious stuff, then the next step is going to be, well, what else are they trying to do on mobile? And then we'll take a look at that and see, you know, if we fix these other things, do they even care about the rest of it? Because if they don't visit anything else and they just are monitoring on mobile, cool, we fixed the problem, we're good. But if they're like, oh, no, I want to go in and tweak this campaign, or I want to update the subject line, or maybe I want to start an A-B test, like, whoa, crazy person, what are you trying to do that on an iPhone for? But okay, maybe we can make it better. So we definitely have a lot of learning to do. And, you know, adding things like Mixpanel, I think, will help us understand that quite a bit better, because it looks like the event tracking and being able to track it all the way back to a user and me be able to say, all right, this user came in on mobile and they went through all of these pages, because we're going to do like individual page view events. So we can see exactly what they tried to do and when, and, you know, we've tried to track all this stuff manually and it's very half-assed by comparison. So we have a long ways to go on that.
I mean, I just add one other thing is like, I would probably have GA4 running in the background just because like, if you ever decide to go sell or when, because I'm sure at some point you will decide to sell Recapture. Like I think that anyone would want like GA4 data to benchmark against, you know?
Like,
I think it's so ubiquitous. If you're running ads, you need it anyhow. So like, or you should have it, I think. So yeah, I think it is worthwhile having something set up there. So it doesn't just totally fall over later on.
Yeah. Makes sense. Totally. Yeah. And you know, I mean, I'm going to get there. It's just, you know, I have all these other priorities. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Is it going to happen this week? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah.
That's where we're at.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Nice.
Yeah. So before we head out here, I want to say one last thing, and that is I want to give a shout out to Colin in the land down under for his reaching out to me on Twitter to chat a little bit. And Colin, I'm looking forward to meeting you at MicroConf this year. And thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
Awesome. And thanks to everyone else for hanging in with us on this episode. And as always, for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please share it with someone who you think would enjoy it as well. You can always reach out to Dave and I on Twitter. And until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.